And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome in to another episode of One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. Chris Burke back in the QB spot this week, I guess, along with Nick Baumgartner, Colton Pouncey. At practice, he had a long Tuesday too. They had the early practice, the late night Hard Knocks. He had to write after that. So I would think Hard Knocks finally got the debut episode there.
Pretty good. I think it did a really good job of explaining who the coaching staff is. I mean, I think that I was interested to see how much. And I will be in, because it's going to, Campbell said, I think today, I saw Colton tweeting that he didn't watch it, and he probably won't watch it, I guess that means, but like, if he finds out that this whole episode was just about him and the staff, and the next whole episode is about just him and the staff, he's right, going to be like, this is bullshit, you guys need to change this. So I would assume that there'll be more stories about players going forward, because that's a big part of the reason why the Lions wanted them here. But, I mean, you know, the story here is the staff and Campbell. So I thought they did, and the culture that they're building. And I thought they did a really good job of showing the genuineness of that. Stuff that you and I have seen, and Colton is starting to get to see now. Stuff that you and I saw, you know, a year ago when there were no cameras out there. When there was nobody out there. No people out there. You know, and it's just like the up-downs. That was a cool scene. And then I thought, too, Chris, I was curious your thoughts, like, probably not a better little snippet to sum up who Dan Campbell is than that little shot they showed after the first day in pads when he made him hit, and he did the full day. It was right after a day off, and he was like, I can see some of you guys looking at me right now. And he got emotional, and you could see him talking to them like, you know, you got to trust me, right? Like, you got to trust me. And that is so different. Like, you're never going to see that. People look at the up downs and all that. That's whatever. You're never going to see that sort of conversation in other teams. It's just not going to happen. Coach to team, right? So, I don't know. I'm curious your thoughts, what stuck out to you, but that's kind of the stuff that watching it really kind of hit me.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I saw some people mentioning the thing you said about, like, they taught Hutchinson, you know, they did the little thing with his family, and like and Jamal Williams was a little bit in there, but. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much it for the players. There wasn't a lot of focus on the players. So I will be curious to see if that transitions at all. I mean, I assume, like, they barely mentioned Goff. Like, I don't know if Jameson Williams was on screen at all. Nope. You know, there's some guys on this team that you think at some point are going to get some FaceTime here. I know, like, Frank Ragnow was mic'd up for at least one of the practices. So,
so is Anzalone. Yeah, they've done it with a lot of guys,
They're going to get some guys on there. But, I think to your point, like, people get tired of hearing sometimes us talk about the change in culture and, like, how much different it is and everything. But, that episode alone sort of hammers home that, I mean, the Hutchinson thing, singing in the room and all the other guys jumping up and singing with him, like, that would not have gone on in last regime.
Like, can you imagine? Can you even imagine?
And Staley and Glenn out there, you know, talking trash and going at each other during practices right in front of Campbell. And like, I don't know, just all this stuff that sort of goes back to what we've been talking about for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years now, just it has a different feel. And I don't know that it's going to work. Like, you, who knows? You know, like, again, if they're 5-12 this year, and Campbell's, he's going to be the exact same guy. And, you know, like, at some point, you have 2 or 3 years where you're not winning games. Those looks from players about going an extra, you know, pads on the first day, they're going to go from like curious to like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And so that, you know, eventually you got to win some games, but I think the atmosphere is such a big deal. And I think that's why the coaches were spotlighted. I mean, I guess just since you pay so much attention both to this team and the NFL and college football too, mm-hmm. I mean, do you think we're going to see more coaches like this coming through the ranks?
Yep.
I mean, it's just like, I mean, it seems like the Belichicks of the world are...
Yeah, they're dying out here.
Fading out a little bit?
Fading.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair... You know, and who knows, right? That's a... Everything is cyclical, and Belichick is such a unique... It's a weird thing because he's so unique, right? As we've discovered, like, there's nobody else like him, and so many people tried to copy that, and we found out that it's impossible, and you just can't do it. But, and I've thought about this a lot. We've talked about it so many times. When they hired Campbell, and I told you right away, I was like, he reminds me of Brady Hoke in all the best ways that I can remember Brady Hoke. But there are also parts about him, and we've probably talked about it on the show, but there were parts about Brady that were bad as a football coach that just weren't good because he struggled with, and at the time, and you know, you talk to Brady now and he'd probably tell you, you know, communication was a big thing, not admitting, not being able to maybe sometimes not admit, but like sometimes know when you're making a mistake in the moment. Like Brady was one of the guys, but he wasn't one of the guys, right? He didn't play. He did play, played in college. Campbell played in the NFL for whatever. He's been through all this. There's nothing that they haven't seen that he hasn't been through. And I think that you can see it come across that like win, lose, or draw, there's a vibe here. And I really do think that that vibe is going to be copied some. How much? I don't know. Like, if they win, if the Lions are average this year or whatever, that's going to be copied all over the place. The nice guy hires are going to start to happen, I would think. And hopefully the former player hires, because that's really, I think, what, you know, if anything, that episode was probably about showcasing, you know, Kelvin Shepard and Deuce and AG and those guys and, you know, all the assistants that they have here, because those guys are guys that Dan wants to get elevated to. So, you know, I do think that this is something, and I've wondered a lot about it. You know, how much it gets replicated, but also like that's pressure on Dan Campbell to win for all the guys like him, I think, because he has to win to prove that you can do it like this for other guys like him. Cause there are other guys in the NFL like Dan Campbell. I really do think that, that you could give a shot to and they maybe would make you look pretty smart. But as we've talked about, he's got to win, man. Like if this fails, you're not going to no. It'll be, well, it turned into a friends club. It wasn't, we weren't making hard decisions because we felt bad for each other, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's what you try to guard against. So you got to win games.
Yeah. I mean, I think he talked about this a little when he got here too, because obviously they're old school football guys in the way that they approach the game itself. But I think, mm-hmm. you know, he talked about when he got here just, sort of growing as and like changing to meet what current players need from their coach, right? Like it's different. You're not doing 2-a-days every single day at training camp in the heat. Like we're having conversations about mental health now and they're mm-hmm. scouting players based off what they post on social media and it's just a different environment. And so I think if nothing else, you can give Dan Campbell credit for being, I mean, he's a tight end from Texas who came up playing for Parcells. Like there was a time there where you would have put him in as like just the prototypical like meathead guy. Yep. And I think to some, you see some of that still come out for sure, but I think you've got to give him credit and give some of these coaches credit because I think you have seen them shift to meet what the current NFL players need from their coach. So I think that, you know, you talk about like Campbell wanting the players to be highlighted in the show, and I'm sure that's true. But I bet he doesn't mind getting Glenn and Staley extra time because he wants those guys. He's going to be sad when they leave, but he wants those guys to be head coaches. And you see them, and it's not far off, man. Like those guys are going to be head coaches soon. So I think he'll like that aspect of it, that he's getting the chance to show off the staff that he's built a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a unique, I guess, however long it's been that he's been here. And it's hard, like you said earlier, like it's hard to sort of explain to people who can't see it you know, what this is and what it's about. And a lot of times I point to one quote that we had in the story that we wrote about Campbell last year when we talked to all his friends. And I think it was one of the McKinney brothers, Seth or Steve. And they talked about how it's something that's hard to, it's hard for old players to sort of explain. But they're like, you know, if you've been in a locker room setting your whole life, if you've grown up sort of as an adult, through college, through your 20s, through your 30s, even in a locker room with other people, like in a football setting, like there's a level of like maturity that your head hits as a ceiling. Like you only get so far as a professional, right? And you have this language that's sort of shared amongst you that you know and only you know. And his point was like, Dan speaks that language better than any coach in the league. He understands what they're going through every second of every day, all day long, when they're at home, when they're worried. You know, you saw at the beginning of the thing where he's like, don't start counting the roster sheet yet. We're not doing that. The quote about the Metallica lyric is whatever, but it also was one that it's also one that makes sense because, yeah. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think that that's the uniqueness of it. And that's what shines through. And that's why he's different. It's hard to explain. It's hard to write about sometimes, but you know, they did a good job of showing that. And I don't know how it would be hard not to, I think, but you know, hey, good job. They did a good job showing it, but it's hard, you know, you're around Dan Campbell for 10 minutes and you can kind of tell.
Yeah. And I guess the last thing I would say is just not to keep harping on just the difference between the last regime and this one, but I think it was interesting. They had their reasons why they went out and hired Matt Patricia. A big one was that they had already hired Bob Quinn and he wanted right. Matt Patricia. But, you know, they had their reasons for saying, all right, this is a guy who's been – he hasn't been here. He doesn't know this place. It's totally different. He's been in a winter. He can maybe recreate it here. We need something that
yes.
takes us way away from what we've been.
Right.
And I think we saw that the mistake in that was that you just can't do that in this place. You cannot say – like, forget about the history, forget about what the fans have been through, forget about, you know, what the people around here are like. Like, you can't do that. This is all ingrained in the organization. Right. And now we see, like, Dan Campbell has, for, like you said, for however long it's been here, you know, it feels like it's been longer than it has. Really does, it hasn't even been, you know, it's been a year and a half, a little more than a year and a half. But you see that he just fits, and they're continue to bring in guys who fit what, not just this team is looking for, but what they know that the people around here will rally around. You know, they're bringing in guys who are going to work hard. They're going to be good people off the field, like all this stuff that you still want to win games, but there is almost a college feel to it, just the way that they built this thing. So it is, and we've been telling people about it, and a lot of that stuff we haven't, you know, we don't get to see. Hear him in the locker room like that. And so I think it was just sort of confirmed everything we thought we knew about what was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's
so,
well said. Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. It's a fun show to watch. So
yeah, they do a great job. I hadn't watched the last couple seasons. I can't remember the last one I watched. So this is the first one I'd seen in a little while. And yeah, they get everything, man. They got the Sewell hit on Okuda that we wrote.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, they made him look like, because Colton got the link or whatever, I think a little early, and he was like, oh, they got the Sewell hit. It looks amazing or whatever. And I'm watching it and I'm like, sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, it looks like that scene from Rudy when that like lineman pulls up and he's in slow motion. You know what I mean? And he's running into open space and he just buries the guy.
I'm
like,
holy
shit, that looked pretty cool. And you're like, wow, yeah, those cameras that they have at every single inch of that field look pretty good. It's quite an operation. Did you know, I don't think the Lions even got to see the show pretty much until it aired. I mean, they might have saw it an hour or two before, I think, right? Like, that's it. So
it's pretty
crazy how they do
too,
that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is cool. All the stuff they get, they do a great job presenting it. I mean, I think it was interesting too. Mentioned Hutchinson off the top, and I know you like heard it from people on Twitter that Sewell, like, he lost one rep to Sewell. They showed the highlight Sewell shutting him down. So I thought it was interesting that they did air a little bit of that back and forth between Sewell and Hutchinson and showed a couple of Sewell wins, and then Sewell talking about
Right.
Whatever the move was that Hutchinson did, where he's like, I wasn't ready for that. That was pretty good. You know,
right.
So I think that I hope they show more of that, because that certainly is, like, for me,
that's the
matchup in camp right now, like Sewell and Hutchinson.
And it seems like if I'm guessing, they get that, you know, I mean, they're around us too a lot and they hear what we talk about.
Yeah.
We've talked, you know, that first day, that's all anybody talked about was in pads was Sewell, because Sewell looked so good. And it was everybody staring at those two. And so I hope, yes, like I saw the little clip that they had about Decker sort of pulling Panay aside and saying, like, look, you know, the pads are on. It's time to go push these guys. Nobody took it easy on you, you know, last year when you were swimming in it. So let's go kick his ass a little bit. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you want to see and you want to see come across, because, you know, we're going to get into the team here in a second. But, like, I was out there yesterday and I hadn't seen them since Friday. I didn't go to the scrimmage. So, and they did not hit on Friday. The last time I saw them hit live was like middle of last week. So it'd been about a week. And I would tell you that Aiden Hutchinson has gotten better in a week, because he's making Panay Sewell work harder and he has more answers for him. And you can tell, you know what I mean? Like, there are reps that he's losing more than he's winning against Panay, because Panay's very good, but he's winning more than anybody else is against Panay, is what I would also argue with you. And when they do one-on-ones, every time I go over there, I don't see Panay or Aiden working against anybody else. It's just those two. Mm. So that is definitely something to watch and monitor as we go forward here.
Do you get an IMDb credit or anything for
no.
your...
Hopefully not.
I was disappointed we didn't get to see Colton's name. Yeah, right.
In there. Yeah, and like we got the yeah, and he's like, it's just my name on the little tile. I'm like, okay, well, at least it got that in there. And he's like, your voice is in there. I'm like, okay, well, hopefully no one will know that it's me, but maybe some will. I'm sure the listeners picked up, maybe one or two.
All right. Well, they got the preseason opener on Friday night against Atlanta. I will be out there for that one. I went out to practice last Friday. I went to the scrimmage on Saturday. Not in an official media capacity. I took my kid down, but, you know,
you had 60,000 people. Right.
It was a nice turnout for
pretty good.
It was more than last year for sure.
Yeah, right. I think it was Corey Woods tweeted that it was hard to park. And if you know what that means, then you know the size of the crowd. And I was like, that's pretty good. I know what that means. Pretty hard to park. Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was a good turnout. I don't know. I mean, I think that they're in a good spot. It'd be interesting to see them. They got the matchup against the Falcons. Dan Campbell said they're going to play the starters a little bit, and they go to Indianapolis. When does that start? Tuesday practices there, and then that game next week, which I would assume we won't see the starters in that game. Usually when the joint practices, you leave the starters out there for most of those joint practices, and that kind of counts as your preseason reps.
Right, and Colton will be there for that, and we're going to do a show with him from Indy next week, so... Stay tuned for that as well.
And that's a cool setup. I don't know. I don't know if you've been to that Indianapolis.
I actually haven't. No.
It's cool. It's like its own little. There's like a. At least last time I was down there, there's like a par 3 golf course.
Oh
like
God! That's
nice
awesome.
Little indoor, there nice indoor facility, and then 2 or 3 fields, and they let you get. Again, it was. I think it was the previous regime that I was there, but like previous Colts regime. But you know, last time I was there, they let you walk right up. Like to the sideline as they were practicing.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, wow. Where is it at? Is it in Indy or is it outside?
It's not in Indy. It's like in Anderson or something.
Anderson. Okay. Yeah, I know where it
is.
Is that
a city? Is that a correct city?
Yep. Yep. I love all that. I love Indy. A lot of people don't, but I like Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And the surrounding area. Yeah.
It's a cool setup. It'll be a good, good spot to have joint practices. Like I said, the one joint practice I did was. The Raiders out in Napa Valley, behind a high school, like the people who read the first story from that week might remember it, but like the weights, there wasn't a weight room. So they had like the weights outdoors in the California, like August heat under this like tin
God
roof
almighty.
Awning. It was just
Patricia
ridiculous.
Was in absolute heaven for
ridiculous
that whole,
setup.
For that whole thing.
But the joint practices are pretty great. They get you some good looks, and the one-on-ones are always fun. There's always With this Lions team, you would assume there'll probably be at least one minor scrap at some point.
Yes.
The Colts.
Oh, God. Yeah. And the Colts are, you know, they're, that's what, you know, the Colts are putting some serious work in here, too, because they're changing their team, you know, and I imagine this is going to be good. This will be good for both sides. And, you know, they, did they play each other last year in the preseason? And then Campbell and Reich made that, like, deal ahead of time about, like, we're not going to play our starters. Am I remembering this wrong?
Did that happen? No, is that? I can't remember.
That sort of happened.
That
so I think
right.
my
that
point
sounds,
is
they
I
did
think,
play last preseason.
Yeah, point is, I think Campbell and Frank Reich are like friends or friendly. So I wonder this could be kind of a cool deal. I'm wondering how this will all go, but we'll have it covered for you, wall to wall from Colton.
Looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good test for the Lions. They got some guys who can go. They have some big physical receivers.
Mm-hmm. They're really
good.
Good
test for the DBs. They've got some guys up front on defense,
the offensive
too.
Line. Like you're going to go against
Quentin
Nelson.
They got Ngakoue now off the edge. Quiddy Pay's down there.
Right.
It'll DeForest be a really Buckner's good. Buckner's and playing inside. So they got some guys for sure.
All the areas you'd say that the Lions need to be tested right now, like the Colts have some guys that will test them. You know what I mean? Like that's what it's kind of how I look at it. So it's a perfect little challenge for them. Yeah. It'll be good.
All right, so Lions Friday opener. They released their, you know, depth chart as they're required to do. It doesn't mean all that much early on, but expecting to see the starters for maybe a series or two on each side of the ball. I don't know. Just we can get into this a little bit position by position, but just overall, what are you looking for this first game out here?
Well, I think that the number one thing is, you know, is Jared Goff going to look like he's looked every time I've seen him every day since OTAs? Because, you know, I'll say it here. He's had a terrific offseason. And not just good or average, like very good, terrific, great. He's been really good. Like he's been, and again, like yesterday, I was out there and he's dropping dimes over the top. Him and DJ Shark have a really good rapport going right now. We know that he had one with St. Brown and Reynolds. He is in full command of the team and the offense. He looks like a person who is more sure of himself. All of that, I want to see in whatever time they give him against another team, if we're seeing similar, you know, him being willing to take more chances down the field when they're there, or at least give guys a shot in more contested balls, is he willing to do that? And B, if he does make a mistake, are they going to let him hang in there and see if he can pick back up and go? Because if he goes against, you know, the ones and his struggles or whatever, and kind of looks like Jared Goff again, and we don't see him, you know, like that's going to be, that's not what we saw from him all camp. What we've seen from him all camp is what I would tell people here. He's been really good and the offense has looked good. And you can say whatever you want about the defense as part of that, which is fair. But last year at this time, as Chris knows, the offense did not look good and the defense still looked bad. So
yeah, right.
Really want to see as that's where it starts for me. And as little or most, I don't know how much he'll get, but you know, you will not talk to one person in Lions camp right now, even in an honest moment, that would tell you anything but they've been really, really happy with Jared Goff. Really, really happy with how he's worked and prepared and seems like he's ready to go. So I want to see what he looks like against another team. That's my first thing right off the shoot.
Yeah. I mean, I would sort of spins into the wide receivers a little bit, I guess. But the DJ Shark, you mentioned the rapport that's building there. And I think, you know, we talked to Ben Johnson, watched some film with him about Shark and Josh Reynolds, and you know, as he was going through that, he was saying, look, here's all this stuff that we know Shark can do. We're going to find out some of these other things he can do, too, because there might be more there than what he was able to show. And I think that's been, for me, that's really been interesting. Like the deep balls, yeah, you know he's going to press cornerbacks with his speed because he can just go and turn it up. And but I think I haven't seen him as much as you, but the route running looks a lot more
it's better
nuanced and smarter than I thought it was, to be honest, or that he's been able to show. So and I think that that's what has been interesting. I mentioned the big takeaway for me for the couple of times I've seen Goff is not just that he's throwing the ball well. It's that, like you said, he's willing to throw some of those passes where guys are not open necessarily. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the lines that Ben Johnson said to us that stuck out to me. It was like, and I'm going to paraphrase it here because I don't have it right in front of me, but it was like, Just do your job. Don't worry about, is he open? You know, does he have a bunch of space? Like,
rip it. Yeah.
Throw the ball and let him go do what he's supposed to do at the end of it. So, like, if Shark is, if the cornerback's in phase with Shark when the ball gets let loose, like, if they're even, Shark's going to pull away and get a couple yards and have some room to drop that ball in. And I think we've seen that so far. And so that's the element that they really were missing before they got Josh Reynolds last year. And they still were kind of missing after they had Josh Reynolds. And now, I mean, he's a guy that if defenses are going to leave defenders one-on-one against him out there, Goff should be throwing to him every time he drops back until they change that coverage, because he'll get open. So, I'd like to see just sort of how that looks. That's an interesting position for me, because I think we know the top three, maybe the top four. I guess you probably put Khalif Raymond in there. Cephas has been banged up. I would have had him as the five, but I don't know. Trinity Benson seems he's come back to earth a little.
Yeah, he's come back to earth. It is not – he hasn't done as much that I've seen that has stood out. And I think it's because, like, and Cephas looked good until he got hurt, right? And Kennedy is starting to do the Tom Kennedy things again, right? And the guys at the top are really working. And you know what I mean? Like, Reynolds and Chark and Amon-Ra are really, really working. And so it's a lot of what we are used to seeing sometimes from the underneath receivers is overshadowed every day, frankly, because Chark is not taking snaps off, and neither is Reynolds and neither is St. Brown. They're not giving reps away. Last year in camp, Tyrell Williams and Rashad Perriman couldn't have given those reps away faster, right? They were like, anybody else but me. I'm hurt. Somebody else could do it. These guys are out there working. So the bottom of the bottom of the roster, it's made it, I think, even harder for them to stand out, because you've seen, like, we saw a catch from DJ Shark yesterday in the back of the end zone between two safeties where he's getting hit and he's still getting both feet down. And it's like, they're the ones who are making the whoa plays. That's what, you know, if I could communicate anything to anybody about that position right now, it's that the top of it looks like a professional, you know, wide receiver core, and it didn't last year. And, you know, that is, I think, going to help. And that's why I think you've seen, that's a big part of the reason why Goff has been, like you're saying, like, great examples all over the place that are coming to mind here just from a couple practices, like, you know, him taking and just ripping the ball down a sideline when a guy's in one-on-one. Don't look and see, you know, where he's at when the ball lets go. Let the guy go make a play and adjust. And they've had so many chunk plays in camp this year that they didn't last year just because of that. And so, the top of the chart in that receiver room is the story this year, and the bottom of it was the story last year. You know what I mean? And it's changed. And I think that that's important to note here. And, it'll be interesting to see if that all carries over. But, yeah, Trinity Benson's come back to earth, because I think the guys in front of him have made it harder to stand out. And I think that's kind of part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I will be curious to see what they decide, because Tom Kennedy, I don't think is ever going to be a great NFL receiver.
No,
they like having him around. He's a good guy to have in the roster, and he seems like he keeps showing up here every once in a while in practice.
Yeah.
And same with Pimpleton too. Like,
he does a few
things. Back in the spring for sure, and then the little bit I've seen, you know, whenever he gets the ball in his hands,
he's
dangerous.
He's going to make it through the first round here, of cuts for sure. I think he might get a pass to the next week. Yeah, we'll see.
Of course, those guys will also have Blau and Boyle throwing to them.
Exactly.
So it's hard. I mean, is there, before we go to a different position, is there any separation for you there in that backup quarterback spot?
I mean, I feel like it's a similar conversation, and it's gonna be one of those where, we're going to have to see what they do in the preseason. And I guess, you know, frankly, if it looks like it did last year again, then that's going to have to be a question that we probably get into with him maybe later in camp, but I haven't seen him much. I mean, hey, look, Jared Davis had what would have been basically like a 95-yard pick six yesterday in the red zone against TB212. So, Tim Boyle, you tell me. Okay, and Jared is not known for his pass coverage, and he'd probably be the first one to tell you that. So,
right. Yeah.
That's where we're at with that one. It's not no one is separated to my eye. Goff has been very good, and you know they've been happy with that. But yeah, yeah, we're gonna see here in the next couple weeks about the backup. If Tim Boyle's ready, you know, that's it's up to him. I think that's gonna be the telltale.
I mean, I think we've covered at this point how good this offensive line can be. So two questions for you, I guess. We've talked about Taylor Decker maybe being the key to this going to the next level because Jonah Jackson's developed, Frank Ragnow's an elite center, Sewell looks like he could be an elite tackle. Mm-hmm. So is Decker, does Decker look like he's at a level to match up with that? Like, is he going to be able to help him elevate? And then the second thing is that we keep coming back to is the depth. And for me, that remains a glaring red flag, yes. But I don't know if maybe you have a better feel for it at this point.
So Decker, yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I don't think we're going to know until we get through maybe 2 or 3 weeks of the season, right, to see how everything holds up, because they have been careful with him. They've been careful with his workload, and they've handled him. They've probably started to handle him a lot more like they would handle Brockers. You know, like Taylor doesn't, you know, he's out there when the ones need to get work in live, but I mean, there's a lot of times where he's not live when maybe other guys are, I don't know how they shake it out, but you know, he's getting one-on-one reps, maybe not as much, right, as Izay, the younger tackle, might be getting. But I still think with him, it's as much about, they see him as, and he's talked a lot about being the older guy with almost like, as Frank's older too now, I guess, with Frank and Vitae to help Jonah and Panay and some of the other young guys about, you know, tricks and little things and just do your job. You don't need to overwhelm people physically anymore. You know, that's not Taylor Decker's job. It's going to be to make sure that, you know, the pocket is set the way it needs to be set, to make sure that he's holding up, you know, in the ground game the way that we know he can, right? And I think that what we've seen from the first line is sort of shown that. But yeah, the big question with him will be, can he hold up? Because there's still not a lot of answers there, you know, behind him. Because if you got to move Sewell back again, okay, cool. He can do that. I think no one's worried about that. But like, if Decker got hurt and you had to move Sewell back, then, you know, Izay is an interesting young tackle, but he's not ready. And the rest of those guys are battling. But again, they really haven't developed a backup there yet that you really would trust. And as much as we've talked about Evan Brown being, you know, a solid backup center, and that's important, you know, that's about it still. And so, you know, Stenberg, I have not seen what I would call a turn from Logan, although we'll have to see what he does in this game, right? Like, that'll be another, we're right back to where we were a year ago, I think, in that case. Like, you're waiting to see how some of these guys hold up in preseason, because in a lot of cases, when I've seen the backups in there against the ones or twos on defense, it's not been pretty. So, like, it's been very similar, but yeah. We'll see. It's not where it probably needs to be, but yeah.
Tight end, Hockenson, I think, is locked in. James Mitchell, that was one of the big takeaways for me being out there. He looks like he's moving really well and blocking fairly well. I was surprised at sort of just how far along he seems to be, you know, physically coming back from that knee injury. So I would assume at this point you just
Mitchell
put him on the roster for the week one, right? So that's two of maybe three, and then you have like 14 other guys trying to get on the team. So,
it's Brock Wright or Zylstra would be my, and Zylstra has
Garrett Griffin in there at all? I mean,
probably
that's a New Orleans guy, yeah,
probably. But Zylstra, and then, you know, Funchess, I guess, would be a tight end, but he's almost been a receiver, and I don't think he's been hurt. So, you know, he's got a long way to go if he's going to make it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but Zylstra has looked okay. I mean, and they like him. We know that. He's looked okay. And again, with him, it's about health and everything else. But I do think they're going to come away from this week and probably next week after the Colts feeling a lot better about Mitchell. Yeah, because we just talked about Davis a second ago. He had a take on in run fits maybe this week or last, whatever it was, where he took Davis on, you know, in the middle, and it was fine. And he, you know, he blocked him. And I was like, okay, if you can take Jared Davis on in the box, your knee is fine, and you can do the things that they hope you can do. So you saw him squat down, get underneath, and root him out. I still I was reminded of how much I liked the James Mitchell pick the last couple times I was out of practice because, yeah, you're right. He's moving well again, and you can see the flexibility and sort of squint and see maybe what they want him to become long term. So it was good to see him back out there.
And then we'll just wrap up the offense and then take a quick break and go to the defense. But the running back spots, Swift, Jamal Williams, man, Campbell might demand that they keep signing Jamal Williams as long as Dan Campbell's here. It seems like that's one of his guys at this point.
You know what? And Swift has been great. And there's not a whole lot to say on him other than he's been very focused and good. And all the stuff that we talked about from him in the spring is still holding over. And Staley continues to, you know, push him and everything else. But Jamal Williams, the thing that hit me, Jamal Williams is Dan Campbell's Dan Campbell, if I had to make a guess. When Sean Payton kept signing him and Bill Parcells kept signing Dan Campbell because they were like, I need a guy on my team that can do this, that is Jamal Williams. And I wonder the same thing if they keep saying, let's keep him around. Because when they had a crappy practice and he was like, I don't want to look at this anymore, and he walked off, he was like, Jamal, you go send him in. That was not on accident. So.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what hit me. Yes, Jamal doing well, but I mean, I think that more than anything, you know, that's a spot that the focus I think is much higher because Swift I think is you can see how he's working. There's no he does not take any time. There's no he's not sitting out. There's no rest days. I mean, I'm sure that they have some, but he's out there working every single day. So that's been probably encouraging for them to say for sure.
Is that still Craig Reynolds at the three? Because there's
I think so. Because
collection of guys there that are interesting.
He got dinged up the other day, so we'll see. He had to leave, I think, practice the other day, so we'll see how it goes. I would say yes, but Jamar Jefferson's also ran really well, and Justin Jackson just got signed, so you know, interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, so let's flip over to the other side of things. We talked about Hutchinson and his growth. I mean, I think at this point it's fair to say that he's going to be starting in week one if he's healthy, right?
Yep. They had him on the sheet there, and it looks like that was probably – I mean, that one is pretty closer to being real, I would think, than anything.
So Hutchinson, McNeil, Brockers, Harris probably are your starting four for that opener. Still haven't seen Romeo, right? Like, he's not doing anything yet, at least on the field with the team.
And Levi
and
well.
Levi's been banged up, and now Julian's banged up, right?
Right.
So Pascal is still hurt.
And though they do think that I think Pascal will be back faster than they originally anticipated, and like the, it's hard to say because he had one of those sports hernia things,
right?
Like based on the timeline that Campbell gave us, like it didn't seem unreasonable that he might be back out there by the end of training camp to be hitting and stuff. And Campbell acted like they thought he might even be able to be faster. So we'll see if he's able to get back out there. But the ultimate point here is that Levi is hurt again. Julian Okwara wasn't out there yesterday.
Okay.
And it's getting thin. And it's starting to, as much as you like the growth from Aiden Hutchinson, and I think McNeil's continuing to have a good camp, I liked what Levi looked like until he got hurt. But, you know, like, that's back-to-back training camps that he is missing valuable time. And, like, it's not like Levi on the words, it's not like he's not a big part of this. Like, he, part of the reason why they made their shift in,
right,
and what
right,
they did up yeah. front is him. And, you know, like, for him to miss time right now, and Campbell hasn't talked about it much. They haven't really got into it because it hasn't been that many days that he's been missed, but it's been a couple, right? And so, yeah, it's one that you're looking at and you're like, that would be one that I would start to wonder about in terms of depth, because there's just not a lot there in terms of proven depth.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think Austin Bryant at the start of this offseason looked like a guy who just didn't fit with the numbers or anything. And now you kind of look at him and say, well, they seem to like him, first of all, and they like the production and the length and everything. And so you sort of
hardy plays. Yeah, right.
Maybe moved him back to the other side of the cut line. I mean, James Houston's kind of interesting, but he's a, you know, sixth round pick who kind of bounced around spots in college. Demetrius Taylor, I think, has been interesting. Campbell, I saw talked about him Monday or Tuesday, just how he makes a play every day.
Always looks good. Yep.
But those are, I mean, that's an undrafted defensive tackle.
Exactly.
Like I said, James Houston's a sixth rounder. Kaminsky,
is one of the guys that if you polled, you know, all the beat writers, they would tell you, you know, that's a guy everybody wants to see against the Falcons because he's made plays pretty consistently against the twos here in pass rush situations. But, you know, you'd like to see what he can do against, can he go play on first down inside? You know, can he hold up? Because he's athletic, right? He can get and make a work a move on a guard and beat a guard and go make a play in the backfield. But, like, can you rely on him to be, you know, a guy who can play first and second down? And, like, that's a big one for a lot of those guys underneath. Because if the answer is no, and Levi's hurt for a longer period of time, and Julian, who I would still argue needs to get stronger, you know, to really be the full operational version of himself, if he's hurt too, and Romeo's still on the mend, then, well, now we got to go talk about signing somebody, I would think, again. And I already signed that Bugs. So Campbell loves his name, by the way. But so they already signed one, but I almost wonder, right? Like if you get through the Falcons game and you're still having a lot of questions and guys are still hurt, well, that's not good at all. So.
Yeah. The depth, I mean, if nothing else, you're just sort of losing your flexibility. That was one of the things like, well, on third down, you can move Hutchinson inside and you can do all these things with all the other guys. But if you don't have players behind him, that like who are you putting on the edge then at that point if Julian's not playing in week one or whatever, you know, not that he's gonna miss games, but
you know, like hypothetically, James Houston's probably not ready, you know, like that's, you know, the reality.
And so inside too, I mean, Brockers didn't really play against the pass last year. He was a two down guy a lot of the season, and McNeil too was the same thing. They didn't really use him in pass rush spots. So if you're sticking to that strategy, I don't know that you want to move Hutchinson inside necessarily if he's playing well on the edge. I mean, he can, but
Levi is the most versatile guy of the inside guys that they have. And Pascal could be the one that, you know, depending on where his weight and strength is at and everything when he comes back. But those two are the keys to this whole thing being, you know, the way we try to explain it. Like, people get so fixated on even front, odd front, whatever. What are you? Are you a 4-3 team? Are you a 3-4? What are you? That's all antiquated, and that's not how you should look at it anymore. Like, it can morph and rotate and shift and change the more you have guys that can play multiple spots. Aiden Hutchinson can play 3 spots, maybe 4. Like, Charles Harris can play 2, maybe 3, right? Julian can play 2, maybe 3. Levi can play 3 spots if he's healthy and in shape and ready to go. And him being hurt and on the sideline is going to start pissing people off because, like, they know how valuable he could be if he's out there and ready to go. And it's like, dude, what's going on, man? Like, and I don't know what his injury is, so maybe it's a freak thing, and who knows? But it's like, man, like, he missed a lot of really important time, and it never felt like he caught up last year. And my immediate worry for him is, like, is that going to happen again? And if it does, then yes, they would have to rethink probably quite a bit about how they want to play up front this season.
I think, I mean, is Jared Davis, are we still talking about him as an edge?
No, I don't. Not really. He's mostly been inside.
Okay.
I saw him yesterday in the red zone. His pick actually was when he was out as like one of those wide nine type deals. So, but mostly he's been inside as a linebacker. So, Houston has been working on the edge, as we would expect. So that seems like where he's going to be. Austin Bryant, of course, too. So, and the other thing, too, to note would be Charles Harris looks very good. He looks improved, even from what we saw last year, which I think is saying something because he had probably the best camp of anybody a year ago. But he's got even more, I think, to some of the stuff I've seen from him in terms of pass rush. Feels like he's added more to his game.
Well, that's the – I mean, they need – Campbell talked about it when they brought in Bugs, but it feels like that they might have to go get a body inside to help them defend the run at some point. Just someone who can hold up in there. I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of depth, and there's not, you know, this first matchup against the Eagles. I mean, that was one of the games last year where their defense just got exposed because they couldn't compete in the front seven.
And he talked about that when they lost Penasini, right? It's like, we did lose actually a guy that we're going to have to replace because we don't have another guy on the team that can eat space like that. So,
right. So that's, I don't know. They need some guys back, obviously. Pascal, like you mentioned, you don't want to like hinge all your hopes on him, but that was one of the reasons they drafted him. Exactly what you're talking about. Just being able to play. I mean, he was going to be their inside pass rusher, I think. Yes. At least one of them. Like him and Cornell, maybe. I don't know who else is going to be in that role, but that was going to be his
inside out guy.
That was going to be his job. Go in there on third down and get to the quarterback as an inside pass rusher. And so you need him out there. I mean, he doesn't need to play 55 snaps a game. Like, if you get him healthy enough to play 15 snaps, that might be enough to get the season started. So we'll see there. Linebacker, Malcolm Rodriguez drumbeat keeps getting louder there.
They tried to bury it on that unofficial depth chart. They had him all the way down at like seventh string. That's bullshit. He is not seventh string. I'll tell you that right now. Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
So he was like fourth string for a while when they were doing, you know, just reps wise. And now he's getting first and second team reps.
So it's an interesting. Anzalone is the only guy that you could say of the, you know, so there's two inside linebacker positions. Anzalone's a starter. The second guy next to him is either Board or Barnes or probably Malcolm, right? Like, I think by the end of this preseason game, and this will be his opportunity to make a move, because this is what I would say. Everything that Derek Barnes has struggled with that we know are some of the weaker parts of his game still that he's trying to iron out, like tackling in the box, right? Making sure you're making the right reads, natural sort of feel and coverage. And then just being a good tackler, being good, you know, all that. Those are the things that Malcolm Rodriguez is excellent at. He never misses tackles in the box. If he gets his hands on someone, even if he has to drag his body like a yard or two, like down the field, the guy's going down. Like, that's what you get when he's on the field. Does he lose something in terms of size? Maybe a little bit, sure. But Barnes doesn't have that much more on top of it. So, I think that part of this is Derek Barnes needs to take a bigger leap. And part of this is Malcolm Rodriguez is, I think, who you and I thought he was and who the Lions thought he was and why they were very excited about him when they took him. Because I think that's possibly going to be a really good, maybe a steal type draft pick, you know, maybe we'll see, but like, he looks like we expected him to look when they put pads on. Instinctive, not afraid, making plays. If he makes a mistake, you don't see it again. And, you know, it's hard to ignore that. So I don't want to like totally run the hype train over the tracks here, but like, he's a really good football player. And it's hard for me to see that see a situation where he's not playing this season. Right. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, but it's still a fight in there. And they do like Chris Board a lot. And they like Derek too, but like, the pressure is definitely heating up on Derek Barnes, Chris, I would say.
I feel a little bad for Chris Board because he keeps showing up on these highlight films because they keep putting him one-on-one against like Swift with no help. And Swift to score. Like, well, all right. And they're not a whole lot you're going to do there. But what's the realistic upside for the linebacker unit? This is not going to be a top 10 linebacker unit.
No.
Like, can they be average?
So, I think that, like, if you got to the end of the year and they were average, and you got, like, if you got out of 17 games and you looked at the play from Barnes and Malcolm, and you said, okay, both those guys are better at the end of the year than they were at the start of the year, and as a unit, we were okay, we held water, I think you'd probably be okay with that, because that position is still in flux big time. Big, like, we don't know how much longer Anzalone's going to be here. You know, we just talked about maybe they keep bringing back Jamal, you know, for all those reasons. You know, they like Alex. I'm not going to say that they don't, but, like, you know, he's a guy that is probably going to get passed by somebody younger, and that's probably the plan. You know, and so, as we've talked about a lot, in 2 years, it seems like the plan is for them to have Malcolm and Derek Barnes playing together inside and being the, you know, sort of the leaders of that defense, more or less, in the middle of it and everything else. But you got to get there first, and then you have to learn everything first. So, to me, the linebackers, I feel like I can see their plan sort of more than I can at corner. But it's, you know what I mean? But it's still like, it's hard for me to say that you can put an expectation on them being good this year. Being okay, I think you could probably ask for that. And if they're not better, because last year they were bad, right? If it's the same as last year, then I think you're asking, okay, do we need to, are we done drafting here? Do we need to go back in the draft and look more, you know, or make a signing or something else, you know, because I think that's what you're looking at those spots this year in terms of their developmental track. And is it still where you want it to be when the year ends?
Yeah. Well, funny you mentioned corners, because a lot of the things you were saying, man, were reminding me of that position. Like, probably could be okay. Could be, maybe there's some upside there. But even as you're saying, well, what's linebacker going to look like 2 years from now? I would have the same question at corner, because you've got to make a contract decision on Oruwariye. We don't know, still don't know about Okuda. Harris has never been a full-time corner.
Yep.
Mike Hughes on a one-year deal. Parker. I mean, like, there, I don't know who is, like, if you're looking at this in that frame of reference 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Who are you locking in on this roster for the 2024 season?
Oh, well, nope. I don't think in good faith you could say today that anybody would be. Anyone on the, no one. And no one has done enough yet, right? That I would, well, I mean, to be fair, you're saddled, you know, the Okuda contract is what it is. Because you have him until he's going to be here, right? I think. Because you, well, I guess maybe not. Because he's, this would be his third year, so we'll see how it goes. Yeah, everyone has to prove something here. And, you know, as much as we've talked about how the offense has looked good, and there have been moments, like in red zone situations and some of the short yardage stuff, where Will Harris has made plays and Okuda has done the stuff that we know him to do, the physical, you know, being coming up and make and being playing through contact and all the stuff that we know Jeff Okuda can do. And, you know, in some ways the corners probably get a harder rap from everybody right now because of what we see from them, and it overlooks a lot of where they have improved, because I do think that they're better in terms of, there seems to be less missed assignments. There seems to be more talking. There seems to be more communication. There seems to be all that sort of thing. But you and I know, and so do they, that corners in the NFL get paid for their ability to walk across from another guy and stop him from getting open. And they do not have enough guys on this team that can do that. And that's point blank, period, bottom line. They don't have enough guys who can stop lethal weapon receivers from beating them at the line of scrimmage and getting deep over the top vertically on them. Still a concern. Right? Like, still absolutely concerned the way it was when camp started, the way it was when spring started, and the way it was when last year ended for me. And I think that's also one of those that I would say in the second breath, while it is a concern, it's also fair to say I can't judge them completely until we see them play games, real games. So it's the same conversation you and I had last year where you're like, are they really going to do this? Are they going to go into the season with these guys, right, man? And then you're like, but they kind of have to, because if these are the guys that you have picked that you want to ride with a little bit and see and take a journey with, I guess, and see if it's worth it, we have got to see them in real games against another receiver on another team when it matters, because that's when corners prove that they can play. They can go. We've seen this 1,000 times. You know, how many training camps you've been to where you see a guy go out there and make play after play after play for 3 weeks in training camp, and then they go out in a game and he just gets his ass kicked, because it's like, it's a real game and everything changes. They have to find out who can be a gamer when it's on the line and everything else. And it's hard right now because nobody is, other than Amani, who I think they would like to see him take another step. Everybody else is kind of like, can you do it at all? And that's really the question that you still have for so many of these guys. And that's why it's hard. You're sitting there waiting for Jerry Jacobs to come back.
Right.
Because you know that he'll come back and be one of the most competitive defensive backs they have. And, you know, God love Jerry Jacobs. He is not what we would consider to be a long-term answer for a number one corner spot. Maybe he will become that. I don't want to tell him something he can't do, but you know what I mean? Like, that's the situation still. And it's, it's one where I think some decisions are going to have to be made here. Maybe middle of the year, end of the year, if some guys can't pick it up. But yeah, it's go time for a lot of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me, and people were asking after Saturday, I was complimenting the offense, sort of what you're saying. Like, well, are they getting open, or is it just not?
Yeah,
it's just exactly. No one covering them. And I think
my answer was yes.
Right. It's always kind of in between in training camp. It was the same thing last year. Like, is the offense really that bad, or is the defense a lot better? And then we found out the offense really was really that bad. And the defense wasn't better. And so, you know, but I will say that I think as you look, and Okuda didn't play in that scrimmage on Saturday. So, you're still going
and
off.
And they've been careful with him. Yep.
Right. So how he plays in the preseason, if they let him, and how he does against Indianapolis, those will be big tests. But I will say, like, they don't have the thing with watching them against Shark and to some extent Reynolds is they don't have a lot of guys who, if you're going to put in man and they're just going to flip their hips and turn and run with a speed receiver and stay with them. Like, they don't, if it's going to be in front of them, if you're going to have them coming downhill, if you want them to be physical on guys and compete at the ball and all that sort of stuff, sure. And Oruwariye has some, he's shown all the way back to his college career kind of, almost better closing speed at the end of plays than maybe shows up everywhere else. So he gives you a chance at least there, but that's, they don't have, like you said, a lockdown guy. And there are going to be some matchups for them that are certainly going to be tougher than others. Like the Indianapolis one, I keep going back to those joint practices, but I'm thinking against they've got Pittman and they drafted Alec Pierce. And like, I think the Lions corners will go in there and compete against those guys, and they might look okay against those guys. And then they also have like Paris Campbell, and I don't know who's going to cover him. You know, like there's just going to always be one or two matchups against these corners. It's going to be tough. I don't know that
every week. Yeah.
A healthy Okuda, even when they drafted him as a rookie, I don't know that he was like going to be that.
So let's talk about him for a second. And I'm curious your thoughts on where he's at, all you've heard, everything else, because he's in shape, ready to go, rocked up, looks strong, he's into it, mentally, all the things we would expect from Jeff Okuda. And, hey man, like, he has made plays around the ball, he's been around the ball in the red zone, similar to what I would say we saw from him last year in camp, improved in a lot of areas. But when it comes down to, if you have to go walk out on an island and run against a guy who has sort of like that second level gear, I don't think he has that. Like, I don't know if he has the ability, like you just said, to flip your hips and stay with a guy the whole way. And really, and when, you know what I mean? And not be in a constant, like, you're gassed chasing right now. You're two steps behind and you are maxed out chasing to where even if you can catch up a little bit, you're not going to be able to make a play. Because you're spending all of your energy just to catch up. Like, that's my concern still a little bit with him, because we have seen him got over the top in ways that are familiar. And so, you know, I know you haven't been out there every day, but like, what is your, what do you want to see from Jeff Okuda is what I would ask you here for not only the preseason, but what is your sort of like read on this whole situation from what you know and how things are going to go here?
Well, I think, you know, even more than like, straight line speed for these corners, the thing that has been a challenge and is a challenge is we were talking about the nuance we've seen from Shark at receiver and that St. Brown shows
top of the route. Yeah.
I don't know that the cornerbacks are to a point at the right now where they are recognizing enough of those. I think that was a lot of the problem last year. Like, you'd see guys, it's not even just that like they're going to get beat on a go route, but Okuda's going to try and jump a slant and give up a slant and go for 50 yards. Like, there's a lot of these routes, I think, that you're seeing where just because Okuda hasn't played a whole lot, Harris is playing a new position. Jacobs will be coming back. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks there about just how far along they are in terms of just the mental development of that position and just recognizing what they're seeing and the speed of the game and all those things. And it's tough. At any point, it was going to be tough for Okuda coming off this injury. And now to talk about maybe throwing him back in the starting lineup, I don't know. And we don't know how he's going to react. That's always the thing we keep coming back to on him too. Like, if he goes in there and the first play from scrimmage against Philadelphia, he bites on a move and gets burned.
Yeah, right.
Is he going to bury that and move on? Or is he going to, that going to bother him the rest of the game? He's going to have a terrible game. We don't know. And so I think that that's tough. You know, Aaron Glenn always says his thing is always, you know, you can't be afraid of playing young players. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what it is. It's not so much the physical stuff. It's just like, well, what if they see something they've never seen before? How are they going to react to it? Exactly. Do they have an instinctual way to shut that down?
100%.
And that's what I don't know that these guys do. Yeah, right. Like, I think that was why Jacobs was so impressive last year, is because you, like, physically, whatever. Like, he's not the greatest specimen you've ever seen on the field, but he read those routes better than I think you see Okuda read. And I think to some extent,
it's a great point, because I think Jeff is still, to a degree, when you watch him, exactly in the situations you're talking about. You know, it's hard because I think when he was at Ohio State, he played on, you know, basically the equivalent of, at the time, Georgia's defense last year. It wasn't as good, but, like, you know, they were loaded. Guys all over the place. You know, you didn't have to be focused on all, you could take chances, you could recover. Like, I still think that he's either not respecting enough of what other guys can do or trusting himself too much on certain things and hasn't quite figured out, like you said, and prior to that his time on task, hasn't quite figured out how to make it work for him, I guess, is for lack of a better phrase, because you know what you can do and what you can't do as an athlete. Jerry Jacobs is a great example of a guy who knows absolutely what he can and can't do, and he's not going to get himself in a situation to get burned on something stupid because he can't recover on it, right? Same thing. Okuda needs to move more toward that area of playing football and less toward, I'm a 5-star, number 3 draft pick, I am perfect, I am a superstar. Dude, you need to figure out how to stop a guy from getting wide open over the top before anything else happens. That is still, I think, number one at top of mind for him, and it's why it's hard to really judge anything he's doing right now, and it will be for me all preseason, because, like, we will not know until they play a game with him, a real game, because there was still so much more to unpack before the Achilles with him that gets lost in this, that it's a huge year, obviously, for him, and everybody knows that, but you could there was still a play the other day where Khalif Raymond beat him over the top, right? Right in front of the fans. Everybody saw it. And some of the, come on, you know, the fans, come on, Okuda, you know, you could, and he walked off the field, took that helmet off, and he was furious. Okuda was, right? And so that's the stuff where you're like, dude, like, you gotta move on. Like, that can't be your reaction. And I still think that they're working some of that out with him. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. But hey, man, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to fault him. He's been through a lot, lot here in the last couple of years.
All right, so obviously they could get some help if the safeties are really good.
Well.
All right.
Hey, I am interested, though, because Walker and Elliott, they're the starters. They like those guys, and we'll see about those guys long term. But they have moved Melifonwu to safety.
Yep.
And Kirby Joseph is rocketing up the backup depth chart there. And I think that Kirby and Melifonwu are starting to get, and Chase Lucas, who I think might be a little corner slash safety. They like those guys. Those,
oh, interesting. You know,
yeah. And I think that they're all in on Ify as a safety. And I think they're all in on it, not just because of the traits. I'm going to write about this more this month, but they like his IQ and everything else. And I think he's embraced it. And that could, you know, we've touched on it some, and everybody knows how I feel about it, but like that's been interesting to see. He's made some plays, too. He made a pick, had a nice pass breakup, and, you know, Joseph has not been afraid to hit at all. He has been, you know, all the way what they sort of wanted him to be. So you've got the two older guys in front, the two younger guys in back, I think that's a better situation than we've seen in the last few years here at safety. But do I think it's a good, do I think it's going to be good on the field? I don't know.
Well, so the Melifonwu thing's interesting because I think that's what's jumped out is just that
it really has.
And,
yeah.
And I've only seen him a couple times so far, but you watch him and he's finding the football, he's getting the football, he's breaking up passes, getting his hands on him. And Joseph too, like that was one of the big reasons they drafted him. He had however many interceptions it was last year. You know, he was just around the ball all the time, playmaker. That is what they don't have. At least that's what they haven't had from Walker. And Elliott, I think, has one career interception. That's just not his game either so far. You know, he's a solid safety, but he's not a flip the field multi-interception guy.
Yeah.
Joseph and maybe Melifonwu give them at least some hope for that element. So I think that that's really intriguing because they need that. They need some guys other than Oruwariye who are going to intercept passes at some point this season.
Well, Colton and I have talked about this a lot, but I do think that they want to play a third safety because of just the situation at almost use another safety, a third safety as a nickel and be the guy who can go up there and sort of play in the slot a little bit too because they've got Kirby and Melifonwu are guys that aren't really afraid. You know, they've got the traits. They can go up there and be physical with people. I could definitely see a situation if those guys continue. You know, Melifonwu was hurt the other day, so I don't know what his deal is or if it was whatever. He was out there, he just didn't practice. But if those guys keep, you know, climbing, I could see a situation where they jump some of those corners and get more playing time in rotation, right, than some of the corners would. So certainly when they're on the field in backup roles, you know, when the starters are out and they put those two in there, like that'll be very interesting to see if they're healthy and all that.
All right. So takeaways, you talked about what you're looking for on Friday, but I guess you're 2 weeks into camp now. Almost, I think Wednesday's the last day that fans are allowed out there. It's sort of transitioning into,
yeah, that's true,
you know, slowly into regular season mode. So, you feel like this team's better than it was 2 weeks ago, though.
I do.
I mean, that's always the big thing. Like, are they getting better? It seems like they are, but you've been out there, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that they're better. I think they're getting better in the areas they need to be getting better at, and I think there are concerns. You know, Levi needs to get back. That's the one thing that I would say is starting to butt into one that I would say is kind of a concern, where it's like, I thought that would be one that you'd be closer to checking off is like, that's where we want it to be, right? Mm-hmm. Offensively, it's all where you want it to be, is what I would say. They're ready to go. Like, the offense is what you could... Let's put it this way. It's going to be, I think, it's going to give you everything you could ask or reasonably hope the personnel to give you. They're in for it. Like, they work and they're serious about it. And I think that if you're playing a average to leaky to not here for it defense, they're going to be able to score points. And, you know, I think they're going to be able to run the ball on most people. And if you can keep Goff's confidence up, you're going to be in games. And so the team is better than it was a year ago at this time. It's better than it was, yes, I think when camp started, it's better than it was when mini camp ended. The competition on the roster has improved, and you can sort of see that continue to grow. And that's why we're at a weird point right now, because we need to see, like, I need to see them play a real game, not a preseason game. Like, Colton will get to see them play, you know, in practice in Indy, and that'll be beneficial. That'll be probably the most valuable thing any of us get to see in preseason.
Right.
Whatever those reps are. But, like, we need to see, like, all of us who are around the team every day, I feel like we're at the point now where we kind of need to see them, you know, go through a stretch of games and see how some of these guys are going to respond, because I'm confident that they'll continue to get better at the areas they, you know, that we've targeted that they need to get better at. But there's a difference between getting better and, you know, performing and getting it done. And we're at a point now where guys have to start getting it done, or you got to move on from them. And I think that that's where some of these conversations about, are, you know, I need you to trust me, I need you to be all in on this, and that's where that stuff gets harder, because not everybody goes at the track you'd like them to. And some people start having to fall off the ride, right? Like on the old Willy Wonka tour, whatever you want to call it. And so I think that that's where they're headed to next. That's a good thing, but it's also a challenging thing. So I do think they're growing, but, you know, we got to see it live and in color and all that coming up next. I'm curious, what is there anything in particular that you would need that they could show you that would tell you that they're on the right sort of track? Or is that still too early for any of that?
I really want to see a couple guys emerge in that front seven not the starters even necessarily, but some of these other guys. We just feel a little better about how competitive they can be on a week in, week out basis, because you're not getting through the year with four or five defensive linemen and two linebackers. Like, you're going to need some help there. So to get Pascal back healthy, or to see, like, I think John Kaminsky's a really interesting guy. Like, if he has a really good preseason, you'd feel better about that spot. He's experienced. He's played in a couple different systems.
Good athlete. Yep.
Good athlete. So, yeah, and same thing at linebacker. Like, if Rodriguez looks the way we think he will, or, like, Sean Deion Hamilton, still a guy they really like, if he's solid all preseason, you start to feel better about that spot. So that's, for me, I want to see some of those, like, fringe two deep guys step up, because then you feel better not just about the top of the roster, but about sort of the depth all the way through. So that's it for me. Said, are you going Friday? You gonna be at the game Friday? Or no,
I'll watch, but I don't think I'm gonna be there Friday.
So we got two there. I'll be there somehow, some one way or another.
You'll be in some capacity,
either
of the
in the press box or the stand somewhere. and Colton will be there, and then like we mentioned, Colton will be at down in Andersonville, wherever.
in Colts land.
Down at Colts camp next week for those few days of Lions Colts joint practices. We'll have our next show.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Then calling in from down there, give us some good insight. I'm sure we'll get a ton of really cool looks at those matchups. And yeah, those are always really fun and really revealing about sort of where the roster's at.
Oh,
so we'll get back to that. I always check theathletic.com. Tons of content from Nick and Colton on everything that's been going on camp so far.
Nick's great hard knock stories up there for Colton.
Hard knocks through, a couple. Nick Colton's got a couple of hard knocks things up there. Nick's got some draft content up too. Head over to theathletic.com. I believe you can still get $1 per month subscription. So if you haven't gotten that yet, check that out. So we'll be back next week. You can find us ad free on the app as well as on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you listen to podcasts. So for Nick and I guess for Colton, who'll be back with us next week, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.